T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Mark Cox Morning Show.
I want to compliment your show on how fair and level-headed everything you guys talk about.
Who is this guy? He's saying what we've been saying forever.
Maybe what we need from a conservative standpoint is
the Mark Cox Morning Show.
I respect that. We don't agree. Listen to both sides.
This,
let's get it on,
is the Mark Cox Morning Show. The Mark Cox Shortlist, brought to you by Eggers Heating and Air Conditioning. Call Eggers.com.
We have a manifest that indicates that there was 9 people on board the aircraft.
Tonight is for Kobe.
You have to keep moving. You have to keep going. Put one foot in front of the other, smile, and just keep on rolling.
We need to cut the influence of the defense industry on the Department of Defense.
She ran her office as a Hillary Clinton campaign office.
I have a right to hire and fire ambassadors.
Layla doing a great job this weekend, and a good Monday morning to you. Glad you're here with us on the Mark Cox Morning Show. Tricia Denise along with me this morning, and Sue Thomas in there handling your traffic. And boy, I tell you what a weekend. The news coverage yesterday, just unbelievable, of a Kobe Bryant. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about all of that for you this morning. Jesse Jane Duff's coming up at about 8:10. Tom Ackerman's going to be in here at 8:35 to bring you up to date on the sports from this weekend, including the All-Star Game and, of course, the death of Kobe Bryant. So stay tuned for that. Right now, though, I need to get to Rod the Bod. Rodney Boyd, good morning. How are you, my friend?
Good morning. You know, it's a morning with mixed emotions. As you highlighted, there's been a lot to try to process over the last probably 24 hours. A lot of good stuff, but obviously tragic loss of Kobe Bryant and his beautiful daughter. So, you know, I'm like the rest of the nation, man. We're humming along and doing the best we can.
Yeah, certainly something everybody paused and had a favorite memory of Kobe Bryant. Whether you were an NBA star or not, anytime somebody reaches the point where they're known by a single name, Kobe, that's a big deal, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I told my wife that, you know, what's amazing is I just sort of watched, not a big basketball fan, but I watched sort of him sort of try to put his life back together after making some personal poor choices. And he seemed, in a documentary I saw maybe 2 years ago, like he reconciled with his mistakes, was strengthening his marriage, and was really at this point focusing on trying to be the best husband and father he could be. So,
sure.
You know, the tragedy seems to have come at a very inopportune time, as they always do. But, you know, what can you do? We got to just take life as precious as it is and as fragile as it is, and live each day like it could be our last, because one day we're going to be right, Mark.
The best memory, the best lesson for all of us out of this is that exactly what you said. You never know when your time is up. So, you know, take advantage of every moment and enjoy everything that you can. Rodney, moving into this election year, I got my phone rang last night. I don't answer the home phone a lot because it's usually a solicitor. And last night it was a solicitor with a national polling company polling me about the Missouri governor's race, asking me about Eric Greitens, asking me about Mike Parson, asking me about Nicole Galloway. And then they got into some interesting questions on, well, if you knew this about Nicole Galloway, would you be more likely to vote for or less likely? They're starting to narrow this down. They even talked about Medicaid.
Yeah, no, I mean, Missouri is one of those states that, you know, it has been, I think some people still believe it could be a bellwether. I think that, the polling is going on now in Missouri, in part because of the governor's race. But I think the question that has gotten a lot of attention and is getting more since our last interview is the Medicaid expansion question. So, you know, when last we spoke, I said, hey, there seems to be no formal opposition to Medicaid expansion. There are voices of fiscal concern that have been talking about this for a while. And somewhere in between our last interview and today, the Missouri Right to Life, which has some national ties, took a pretty strong position of against the Medicaid expansion bill. And it made me wonder if now, one, they were listening to your show and people decided to get organized, or B, you know, are people now looking at this and are some national forces coming in to the state? And if so, will we see the kind of thing like you just experienced, polling or organized voice opposition to Medicaid expansion? So maybe that's a part of it, or maybe this somebody just decided to fund, throw some money into the governor's race. It may have been somebody, you know, on the DNC side. We just don't know.
I like to think it was all me, Rodney.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm just kidding.
But it's also fortuitous that you were there to answer your landline. As you said, you rarely answer it. So, I mean, it's really not necessarily reflective of the broader, I guess, thoughts of Missourians if you're only randomly, if you get lucky to get somebody on the phone.
Sure. Yeah, the lady kept thanking me for holding on because it took like 20 minutes to get through all of her questions. And what the fascinating thing was, I kept, as somebody who's a professional in this business and understands these things, I kept listening for the angle because sometimes there are generic polls, but oftentimes they are push polls. And I was trying to figure out if it was a pro-Parson group or a pro-Galloway group, but they actually said negative things about both of those people. They didn't say anything negative about Eric Greitens, which makes me wonder if maybe the Greitens people had something to do with it.
Yeah, it is. You know, we'll never know. We'll never know unless somebody ultimately reveals who funded the poll down
right,
the road.
Right.
But other than that, I mean, a lot of people who pay for polls want to have obscurity because they want to be able to have some inside information as to what voters are thinking about. Now, obviously, this stuff comes out after elections and whatnot, but it could very well be likely that we may never know. Your instinct is good. I mean, if there's three people or three issues and one is sort of left objectively unobscured, you can kind of smell where some of the funding may have come from, but even that's not for certain.
No, I don't mean to suggest that I know that. It just left me wondering when it was over with because it took them 20. All I knew is that they were at the end. They told me it was a polling organization out of Arizona, but they wouldn't give any more details than that. So if you get that call, and, you know, again, I'm glad you brought that up. It speaks to the fact that they didn't call my cell phone. How many people still have landlines? So if they do get a hold of somebody, who are they talking to?
Yeah. And there was an interesting show I saw on C-SPAN with some pollsters, and they were talking about the fact that there are poll companies that are using the new technology, but, you know, it is very difficult to get somebody to sit on their cell phone for 20 minutes while you go through these questions because usually we're very transient and people are on their way somewhere, and they don't have time. And so I think that so you end up relying on the landline. And the landline becomes one that's often answered by people who are genuinely retired or older or have the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're not getting sort of the pulse of the people, I think, if you're just basing it on the landline.
Yeah.
And if you're expecting people to stay on the phone for 20 minutes.
Rodney, is there anything new on the Clean Missouri effort? Because I know that I was at an event this weekend. I talked to a couple of legislators there, people involved in the legislature. This thing is moving forward, I understand, and they're going to get it back to the voters in maybe August.
Yeah, no, that's what's happening. I mean, for those that wondered last year and sort of contemplated that maybe it wouldn't happen and we'd end up working with a demographer, well, that may very well be the case, but I'm pretty convinced now that the legislature is going to pass the resolution to put the issue back on the ballot and ask the voters to focus on whether or not they want to keep that demographer or they want to go to an alternative judicial or independently appointed commission. And so we'll see. I mean, and then the question becomes, you have to fund it. I mean, remember, voters are going to get a little confused if you say we're bringing cleaner Missouri back to do more ethic reform. So, look, I'm pretty certain we're going to get this on the ballot again. What I wonder and what I think we're going to have to see is what kind of campaign will be put around the referendum language. Because last time, Mark, you know this, there was a very robust campaign for the people who wanted it. And there was some pushback, but I think the way it was framed allowed them to carry the day by saying we're going to clean up Jefferson City, clean up Missouri. So now we'll get this through. We'll get it to the legislature. It's a resolution, so it doesn't require the governor's signature. It will go forth on the ballot. And then will there be a campaign, or will voters say, hey, I already voted for this? And so that's going to be, I think, the rub. And also the question becomes now that a pretty formidable group in the conservative space, MRL, has come out forcefully against the Medicaid expansion. Will that produce something inside the building that creates a competing initiative? Will that create an outside-the-building campaign? There are a lot of things at play right now, and it would be interesting to see what kind of impact both, you know, having MRL now inside and outside the building opposing Medicaid expansion as a known group with a weighted voice, and what kind of campaign might be run around Cleaner Missouri, or will it just be put out there and sort of left for the public to sort of gravitate towards it and make the decisions without a campaign?
I hope so, Rodney, because, you know, quite frankly, I talked about it a lot, but I and other conservative radio hosts can't do it by ourselves because we don't reach a big enough statewide audience. I mean, somebody's got to make a coordinated effort to educate the voters. We can't let something like this go by again, like Right to Work, where it's so heavily funded and lied about in many ways on one side, and the other, and the side that makes the common sense argument doesn't ever get heard. That's got to change.
Your point is well taken, and I can tell you this: if there's not a campaign coordinated across the state, at least attempting to touch all 114 counties, my concern is that the resolution fails, and then there's a sort of a sense that people clearly wanted the original Clean Missouri, and I don't know that that's the case.
That's very true. Listen, Rodney Boyd, appreciate your time every week, and I know you've got an appointment you got to get to this morning.
Hey, and great news for your listeners. Anybody making their way up to Jeff City, I'm rushing up there now because our friend the Stanley Cup is going to hang out at the Capitol from around 10 o'clock to 2 p.m. today. So if you're up near the Capitol and you haven't seen the Stanley Cup, it will be available in the Capitol Rotunda today.
Sweet. Very nice. Have fun up there, my friend. Be safe.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Rodney Boyd there, host of Insider Talk here on Sundays on the radio station from noon to 1. So be sure and listen to that. And how about that? I thought the cup was kind of done, but it's still making its way around
making the rounds.
The state.
I didn't want to rub it in, but it's already been here.
Yeah, we didn't want to see anything, Rodney, but it was in our building here at one point.
We've already been there. Hugged that cup. They've been there, touched that, but it doesn't sound appropriate, does it?
No.
But you said it anyway.
But I said it anyway. Well, because what I said sounded ridiculous, so I thought I needed to clarify.
Have you seen the stories about this? And Rasa Kay mentioned it a bit earlier. This coronavirus, which is making its way around, people are getting nervous about it. Markets are getting nervous about it. And I do think that it's a problem, but I don't think it's anything that people need to panic about yet. And I mean, I've talked about it a little bit, but here's the thing: this is one of my criticisms of the mainstream media. In the 24-hour news cycle, when they get a hold of something and start beating it like a dead horse, it creates anxiety in people. People are worried about this who don't need to be worried about it.
The rational side of my brain says this is not that big of a deal. The irrational side says this is the start of the zombie apocalypse. I'm pretty sure this is the one.
There you go. Well, I'm armed. I'm ready to go.
Unless the virus gets you.
Yeah.
Unless the virus gets you and then you're the zombie.
Oh, well, that's true.
You've never
shoot
seen
me
a zombie movie?
Okay. Yeah, you have my permission.
All right.
That's good. You heard that
Can
on
I borrow
radio.
Borrow your gun? No.
So my point is here that I've yet to see anywhere where a health official says we can't fix this. It's just that it's new and it takes a while to develop an effective vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean there aren't going to be people because clearly some in China have died from it already. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure they're ramping up an effective defense against this thing. It's just new. And then you see all these videos coming out of China. And I'm not harping on the Chinese people here, but some of the stuff they eat is weird, right? Like people eating bat soup. Mm-hmm. I saw this picture the other day of a lady eating a bowl of bat soup with the bat's carcass hanging on the side of the bowl.
Oh.
And then there's a picture of her eating it like a chicken wing. Because I guess it's deep fried or something,
mm-hmm.
and snakes, and they don't know if this came from bats or snakes, but they eat a lot of both in China. I'm just saying.
Are they eating the iguanas, the chicken of the trees?
Yes.
Chicken of the trees.
Gotta do what you gotta
That's
do.
That's bad.
Jim Hoft over at the Gateway Pundit. I don't know where he got the video from, but he posted a video this weekend of some dude in like Wuhan, China, doing a snake show. And he was taking these little what looked like garter snakes. It's going to sound gross. And he was sticking them up his nose and letting them come back out through his mouth. Mm-hmm. It was the grossest thing I've ever seen. And he's dancing around on stage. He's doing this, and he's holding the ends of the snake tails out like a mustache. It was, but you got to wonder to yourself,
why?
You have a lot of questions.
Yeah, you have a lot
mostly
of questions
just,
there.
But why?
And now we learn that this disease got transmitted from either snakes or bats to humans.
Yeah. That's what happens when you stick them up your nose. I guess.
I had an uncle that used to travel to China for business. And, you know, it's bad form if you show up somewhere and they serve food and you don't eat it, I guess, or you don't eat enough of it. So he told me that as he would walk to these meetings in this building, there was a McDonald's there. And he would stop at McDonald's and he would fill himself up before he went so that when they asked him if he was hungry, he would legitimately say, I just ate. Mm-hmm. Because first time he went, and they passed him a bowl, and he opened it up, and there was an eyeball floating in it looking at him. He said, that just ruined it for me. Instead, we're just so used to, you know, the way we eat that it was highly, you know,
oh, yeah,
sickening
all those,
to
no,
him.
It would be. But, you know, I think there are a lot of places in the world where it is rude to turn down food.
Have you ever eaten snake?
No.
No?
Nope. Don't plan on it.
My uncle killed one time when he was, it was rattlesnake, killed a rattlesnake one time when he was hunting.
Did you have any?
I was not there, but I heard the story. And then, so he came back and he cooked the meat and ate it. And my aunt was so wigged out about it, she wouldn't sleep in the same room with him for a week.
I
just remember that family story. Tough luck for Uncle Ed, but I'm just saying.
I'm definitely not going to say that if I could imagine being hungry enough that I would. Like, that would, if you're like in a desperate situation.
Yeah, when the zombie apocalypse happens, maybe, but I wouldn't eat, I'm not appalled by it, but I wouldn't eat frog either. I wouldn't eat anything chewy. Like, I can't imagine it's good, right?
I wouldn't think so.
I mean, I know people do it, but if I have a choice, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Only in a desperate situation.
Yeah, like, when this coronavirus gets out of control.
Well,
to take Mark out.
Take me out. I'll
zombie Mark over there. Then we'll eat snakes.
You will not have to worry about that. Don't worry about it. I'm not going there. Won't do it. we'll talk more about this coronavirus coming up here. So stay tuned for that, because you know I do think that the news media coverage of it is kind of causing it to be blown out of proportion. There's no doubt about that. Over the weekend, speaking of news media coverage, the thing that kind of got covered up is the president's defense team standing up and making their initial arguments about impeachment. And they're going to be back at it today. So they get underway in Washington a little later this morning, and we'll talk more about that coming up.
Is without a doubt the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
All right, welcome back to the fine world of local government, where it appears there is a county council person who would like to prevent our police from stopping vagrancy. So in other words, are we turning into the next San Francisco if we no longer enforce laws against people who hang out in places where they don't have a right to be? That's the question we're asking this morning. Our county council member, Mark Carter from District 7, is joining us today. Got him out of bed early this morning just to be on the radio. Mark, how are you?
Hey, Mark. I'm glad to be on.
Good. Glad you're awake this early.
Oh, yeah. I've been up a good 15, 20 minutes.
I'm glad. I had to text him and make sure he was awake. I'm just kidding. Hey, you know, I saw you post something about this and found it pretty interesting. Repeatedly, San Francisco and Los Angeles are getting national attention because you can't step outside a place of business without risking stepping your foot in a pile of something left there by another human being. And
right.
The reason that we don't have those problems is that we have laws on the books that say, look, you can't do this. and we enforce those laws currently. Why in the world would we change that? What's this ordinance that's being introduced in the county?
Well, we're having an ordinance introduced. It's been introduced. It's on final passage on Tuesday, and it's Councilwoman Lisa Clancy has proposed this legislation to basically strip away the language, the legal language of what is vagrancy. And her bone of contention is that we need to decriminalize vagrancy, and this is a tool. The laws that we have right now in the books for vagrancy, even though they're a little bit outdated, it is a tool that the police can use when necessary to move people along, to get people off of private property or even public property at the appropriate time. And if you take that away, it's like taking a tool out of a toolbox for our police. And three of us on the council are fighting against this. We need that tool for our police. Councilman Trakas has come up with some alternative language, and we voted on that last week, and it went down in flames because we didn't have the four votes necessary for that. So what's happening is that this Tuesday we're going to have what's called a committee of the whole, and we're going to have stakeholders in the community come in and talk about this and what the effect of this is. And there's a lot of, as you might imagine, a lot of unintended consequences with this type of legislation. And I'm afraid that it will set us up as another San Francisco.
I think you're spot on. And I'm thrilled that you've brought this to people's attention. That, you know, the sad part of it is with being in the minority now on council, it's hard to stop this train. And I have to think to myself, what in the world are these Democrats thinking about? I mean, honestly, right. Let me read you tell me if I'm wrong here, but 716.080 is the vagrancy prohibition ordinance in the St. Louis County. All it says is a person shall not be a vagrant. And then it gives a definition of vagrancy. And some of these are kind of outdated, but here's what it says. The following classes of persons shall be deemed vagrant. Every person without any visible means of support who may be found loitering around houses of ill fame, gambling houses, or places where liquor is sold or drunk, or every person who shall attend or operate any gambling device or apparatus. And it goes on and on and on. Some of those may seem, the terms may seem kind of outdated, but why would you not want the police to be able to stop somebody who's harassing people at the end of a block or the end of an off-ramp, begging for money all the time?
That's the point, is that this is a tool for our police to take it to the next level. Very rarely do we arrest anyone for vagrancy, but what it does is that we try to get compliance. And if they comply, it's, you know, no harm, no foul. They move on and, you know, call it a day. It's when the person takes it to the next level of being hostile towards the police or having some other issues, or they have warrants out for them or whatever it may be, that's when we have to take it to the next level and we have to deal with it accordingly. But if we can't even get to the first level and give them the authority to move people on, then we will become a magnet for this type of behavior, just like San Francisco and the West Coast has been, because they used to have these laws on their books. And about 10, 15 years ago, they took these type of laws off their books, and you see what happens, is that they become this magnet for vagrancy, and it's gotten to unbelievable proportions in San Francisco and L.A. and along the West Coast all the way up towards Seattle. So we don't want to go there. And this would be the first step to hopefully push back on this idea.
So, Mark, we're talking to Mark Carter, county councilman from District 7. It was pointed out to me today by some friends I have who happen to be St. Louis County police officers that a while back a special order went out to the police telling them not to enforce this vagrancy law. And their belief is it had something to do with a Supreme Court decision or a court decision that they wouldn't enforce this.
Yes, there was a judge, I don't have his name offhand, that basically brought it to the attention of the county legal team, which then trickled down to the police department that said, you know, we need to decriminalize this whole issue and, you know, basically tied the hands of the police going forward. So we've been trying to deal with this for a while, at least the police have. And it's just kind of with this move by Councilwoman Clancy, it's kind of brought this whole issue to the surface, and we're trying to deal with it going forward.
And just to make sure I'm clear, she just wants to get rid of it altogether, as opposed to just changing the language to better describe the kind of people we're dealing with here.
That's my interpretation of what the judge has said, but he's not standing behind it in any kind of decree. He's basically advising the county of this. So, you know, we can take that advice for what it's worth or not. But at this point in time, we're dealing with it and dealing with it on a daily basis.
Yeah, no kidding. So is, I guess my question ultimately, is there a way around it? Is there a way for people to enforce a no solicitation law or nuisance laws to try to approach this from a different angle?
That's what we're trying to do. Councilman Trakas, with the support of myself and Councilman Fitch, have come up with some alternative language that will give the police, if the other bill passes, if we can get our bill passed, it pretty much puts back into the law some more teeth and some more tools, so our police could enforce, begging issues and vagrancies and things like that, but dealing with it from a different angle with some new language and more specific on how to deal with these type of problems. But like I said, there isn't, we don't have a jail full of vagrants out there,
right?
But what we do is a tool to help us get to the next step. And usually what they're usually arrested on is either trespassing or public urination or verbal or physical abuse, or threatening someone, things like that, is where you go with, you know, the next step of enforcement in a lot of these cases.
Yeah, true. Mark, when is the meeting tomorrow, Mark, if anybody wants to show up and express their opinion on this?
Meeting's at 6:30 on Tuesday at the administration building, which is 41 South Central in Clayton. We hope to get a lot of folks there to speak against this move and to support our bill on the Republican side of the ledger. So
man,
we also have some other issues we're dealing with that people might be interested in as well. Bi-state funding, as you saw the other day, our Luke Trolley is on life support, and so we're dealing with that as well. And so now we're dealing with San Francisco vagrancies and a loop trolley. We're becoming more and more like San Francisco every day.
No kidding. The only time in history when a resuscitation there on life support might cost the taxpayers millions of dollars, right?
Oh yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're into this, and we're going to be into this for a long time.
Mark Carter, thanks so much for calling us this morning, my friend. I appreciate it.
No problem.
You bet.
We'll talk to you later.
County Councilman Mark Carter there with more on that. And that's the death of common sense. Why would you do away with an ordinance giving the police that tool? It's crazy. Welcome back. A bit earlier, I brought up this coronavirus, which people are pretty worried about because we don't know what the worldwide impact might be. We know it's really bad in China right now. Dr. Bob Onder, a state senator, is on his way to Jeff City this morning, heard our conversation and wanted to chime in on this. Bob, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for giving us a few minutes today.
Oh, yeah. You're very welcome. You're very welcome.
So you're an allergist. What is your take on the threat here from this coronavirus?
So, yeah, I think, you know, the biggest message is we really don't know. We're dealing with the Chinese. We do know that there have been 2,000 reported cases in China that they are telling us about. But more alarmingly, there are 5 cases confirmed in the United States. Now, public health authorities in California are isolating and then tracing contacts of those cases. So they're doing what should be done. But really, there's a lot we don't know about the coronavirus. We do know that it is respiratory. So I think Denise was talking about people eating bats. I don't think that's how it's transmitted. But And interestingly, unlike a lot of respiratory viruses, where the real reservoir, the petri dishes, are our kids, it seems this is more of a disease of middle-aged to older people. So I think the biggest takeaway is we don't know. It's my understanding from the folks at the NIH that the Chinese are being a little more transparent about information than they were in the SARS epidemic in 2001 and 2002. But at this point, you know, until we have some of our folks from the CDC in the ground analyzing the data in China, we really won't know.
Yeah, it's, you know, the SARS, I can't remember how big the SARS outbreak got. What I pointed out earlier, Bob, is that you got to know they're working on a vaccine for this thing. That just takes a while, right?
It really does. Yeah, right now, you know, the SARS, you know, was very big in China. I don't remember the exact numbers. It never got really big in the United States. But, yeah, it's my understanding that a vaccine, a phase one trial of vaccine, and that's just where you give it to patients and measure their antibody responses, take their blood. Phase one is at least 3 months away. So an actual vaccine in production where there are enough, there's enough quantity to really protect a lot of people, that's got to be at least a year away, if not longer.
Wow. And then that in and of itself is a little frightening, that's for sure. So
So at this point, we don't know whether it's going to be a zombie apocalypse like Denise predicted or whether it's going to be a lot of nothing. But it is with 2,000 confirmed cases in China, It's nothing to dismiss lightly.
Yeah, well, certainly we appreciate your medical opinion on that. And have a safe drive to Jeff City today.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great week.
Yeah, and we'll get you back on to talk about some of the issues going on down there next time around. How about that?
Sounds really good. Thank
you, sir.
Mark.
Appreciate that. State Senator and Dr. Bob Onder from Senate District 2 out in St. Charles County. He's a physician and been paying close attention to this because he's an allergist by trade. Mm-hmm. So he has a feel for what's going on. Wow, if it takes him a year to get this vaccine rolling, you could see a lot of people injured by then.
I just heard Dr. Bob Onder say that there could be a zombie apocalypse.
And you brought it up. So, Tricia, he said Denise, he credited Denise with that, but I'm going to have to correct you.
I'll give the credit to Tricia for the zombie apocalypse.
Mark the tape.
Wow. I have to go home and brush up on my zombie methods here. Zombie killing methods, right? That's it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.